Hello, and welcome to another Nine Circles audio thing. As always, I'm your host, Buke, for a group interview this time. You probably haven't heard him doing an audio thing for a while now, but our friend Corey Butterworth joins us on this episode. Corey, how are you today, bud?
Doing well, Buke. Glad to be back on one of these things. It's been a solid almost a year, I think.
Jeez. It has, buddy. And you messaged me because we are joined by Jordan Jarrett. If I pronounce that wrong, please correct me, Jordan. But of the band Foret Endor. Corey,
no.
Please take it away for me.
Foret Endorby.
Thank you. You're Jordan, welcome. How are you today, sir?
I'm great. Yeah.
Jordan, again. I mean no disrespect with this. I tell everybody here I have the gift of gab, but when it comes to simple grammar and pronunciation, I am like a caveman. So I mean no disrespect, sir.
Yeah, none taken at all.
But we are talking to you, sir, on the eve of, well, it's actually out now, I'm sorry, on the release of your band's new album, Un Voile de Cherie.
Almost.
How was that one, guys?
Threw yours off by a syllable that time. That was pretty good.
Jordan, please correct me, sir.
It's called Un Voile de Cherie.
And this album, wow. You know, Corey has been riding high on you and your projects for years now. Is that, you want to give us a little background here, Corey?
Yeah, and I know another Nine Circles veteran, and Vincent's been a big fan as well. But, you know, obviously been following Falls of Oros for a long time, and they, you know, what you've been doing with them is incredible. And I know across the blog, like, for example, Patterns of Mythology was, God, if not top three, at least in the top five as a collective, you know, album from last year as a group. But Foret Endorby was a more recent discovery, really, that only dates back to last summer for me. So I'm definitely excited to get into this conversation and then hear more and learn more about what you're doing in that space. I definitely plan on talking quite a bit about your performance last year at Fire in the Mountains, because that was my first real exposure to that project. I'm pumped to be here. I'm happy to be talking to you, and I'm looking forward to it.
Jordan, we would be wrong if we did not ask, how does, it's almost October now, how does life find you and your bandmates here in 2020 so far? I know probably just not to take the words from you, but crazy maybe to say the least.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. So aside from preparing to release this record and a few shows at the beginning of the year, we're not really doing much. We haven't done any online shows. It just hasn't worked out. Some of us are spread out between different cities too. There's a few of us in Portland where I live, and then our violinist Sarah lives in New York, and Lauren, the other vocalist, lives in the Denver area. So we're not in the same pod as.
You know, so Jordan, that's an interesting thing you quickly mentioned. I've interviewed a couple artists who have done some live stream shows, and I've never asked them this, and I just thought of it. How is it that if you guys were to think about even doing like a live show, how do you bring into doing a live show with the inherent delay that you get using online communication? How do you overcome that?
Yeah, good question. We would either need to, if we were going to do it truly live, we would all have to be in the same space playing together. Yeah. And so that's kind of why we've talked about maybe doing a smaller group show, but that hasn't come together.
Yeah. You look at some bands, and you know, more I think about it, when they have done these live shows, yeah, they have been kind of everybody gotten together.
Right.
Talk about your album here. I have to say this, but I know before Corey will share his thoughts. Today, at about 5:30 in the morning, I am out in the woods. I'm a big avid hunter. I love hunting, and I more so because it's just an excuse to be in the woods. And I'm there in pitch black woods. It, you know, the beauty of the woods at this point hasn't revealed itself, but there is something special that as you're out there in the woods and the woods starts to come alive and the tone of this album and the journey of this that this album takes on, it is something truly magical. Something truly mad. I'm telling you, it is just the music alone. As somebody who doesn't speak French, so I can't say that the lyrics resonate with me because I don't, you know, obviously know what's being said. But it still draws you into it. It still pulls you in just for the music taking place.
That's amazing to hear. Thank you. That's awesome.
Yeah, it is amazing.
Yeah, and I echo that, Buke, for sure. And I the one thing I will say about 2020 is that it has given me a lot more of an opportunity just to be outside. And I'm finding more excuses to be outside, which is great. And this has definitely served as a companion on quite a few, you know, just hikes, walks, whatever. Cool. And, you know, I happen to be going down the Bandcamp rabbit hole, well, pretty much every day. It's just how it goes. And I noticed that, you know, some of the notes I saw on this album were that it's meant to kind of offer a sense of place. And I think in those moments of being alone and listening to it, I understand that. But I guess kind of pulling from that, can you like maybe dig into that a little bit more, maybe share a little bit more of the inspiration that either went into it or what should be taken away from it, I guess?
Sure. Yeah. So I just kind of, when I started writing the first couple pieces, actually the last two pieces on the record were the first that I started composing. And I realized that they both kind of had really sort of physical or elemental elements. I don't know. Something about them conjured this sense of tactile or place, touch, smell. For me when I was writing them. So I kind of just tried to follow that thread that was presenting itself as I was going. So like the last two pieces, Lit de Poussière, which means bed of dust. I just kind of leaned into that, added tremolo to the guitar. We layered violin and stuff. Like just tried to dig into that sort of dry feeling. And then the last song is a song that's about sort of rebirth and spring, trying to end on like a relatively positive note on the record. And that, I wrote that when it was raining, like spring rain, and tried to conjure those feelings in there too, musically and lyrically. And then at the other end of the album, I sort of envisioned this journey of starting in this forest, like you said, Buke. That first piece is sort of about that and about, I guess, this metaphor of like the forest fire wiping things clean to sort of start over. And all of it is like using place to talk about an internal journey as well. It's kind of both things. So, yeah.
Yeah, it is. I have to ask, is this coming from a place where you yourself, maybe your friends, do you spend a lot of time in the woods by yourself? Do you spend a lot of time in nature with friends or family, or maybe something you grew up with? Is this something maybe you found later in life?
Yeah, I grew up in southern Maine, so there's woods everywhere. Live in the forest city, that's what they call Portland. And yeah, definitely try to get outside. Like my partner and I, you know, go for walks in the woods or go hiking or whatever as often as we can. And sort of that sort of thing, and live on the ocean. So it's kind of all around us all the time. And I've lived here my whole life. So it's just kind of a part of, more than some other parts of the country.
You know,
When
I look like Corey living in Portsmouth, you know, or it's just like, do you like with Corey, I don't want to say take for granted, but it's just like people living in Denver or Colorado Springs. Do you realize the beauty around you? Because me, I live 40 minutes outside of DC. Yes, I have what would be considered mountains for Maryland here, but you know, to Colorado people, they're like, they're hills. So, are you aware of the beauty around you? Like, I just look up pictures of you know, your hometown, and it's, wow, is it gorgeous? Just like I was talking about with Corey earlier.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that comes from just, you know, traveling around the country for, you know, for shows and stuff.
Totally. I think that traveling helps a lot with that perspective. I like friends and I always talk about how when we come home from a trip or come home from tour or whatever, driving through Portsmouth and across the bridge and then you're in Maine, it's just like, oh my God, this is so much prettier than the rest of the East Coast. I think it's kind of a practice to just look around and be present and be grateful. Because again, like I said, I grew up, you know, going to the beach whenever I wanted during the summer because it's right there. And I kind of didn't realize that was unusual for a lot of people.
I'm going to piggyback off that because that's exactly the way I would say it. It can be easy, I guess, to take it for granted or however you want to phrase it, but it is a practice. And I think for me more, it's just like, it's kind of embedded in you, right? You have the balance of being on the ocean, but also with an access to forests and mountains in Northern Appalachia, which is a stunning place in its own way. So it's more just like, it's just an embedded like part of people that, you know, grew up here or are from here. And it definitely translates to, I don't know, artistic pursuits, just general, the way you recreate, the way you seek out your free time, all that stuff.
Totally. And I think it really helped during, you know, we can't not talk about the pandemic, right? And how everything, we already have actually in this conversation.
Right.
But like being here, I've been really thankful to be here and not in a super huge city because we can just go camping. And we were already, you know, that was a thing that people around here were already used to doing too and like doing. So, yeah.
You get a new appreciation for it or reinvigorated appreciation for it. So I'm going to jump off that a little bit, bring on the Seacoast kind of flavor here. Now, un vol de chere, that translates, and I Googled and cheated on this, but hopefully Google is correct. A torn sail, correct?
Yes.
Okay. Does that tie back to the oceanic and Seacoast influence on perspective
for
and all
sure.
that?
Awesome. For sure. Yeah. The third track, is called, I'm forgetting right now. Oh, L'Enfre. Thank you. innovate. Yeah, the anchor is lifted. So like this idea that kind of floating. And actually that the album title is a lyric from that song. So it's just kind of this image that you steer with a sail, right? And if the sail is torn, then you can no longer steer, and you have to kind of like accept whatever happens.
Yeah.
Which I think that's sort of what I was trying to do in writing this record is just process this acceptance of general acceptance.
Yeah. You know, Jordan, that is so funny you mention that, because you know, when you write music, I'm sure, you know, it comes from a place of events in your life, or maybe events of family members or friends, or just whatever's going on in your head. But like, you know, it's funny, you know, when you write songs that, you know, do you realize the impact that could maybe have on others? Because what you just mentioned is my life the past couple of years. I've had to accept at 37, I have heart failure right now. I had to accept that I had to become medically retired and on disability. I went through a divorce. So it's when you mention that a ship just sailing with a, you know, just out there, the anchor's up, we're just drifting. Where are we going to go? That's my freaking life.
Wow. Thank you for sharing that.
Yeah. That's life. That's what I think is just, you know, so cool about music, that there's, you can find, everybody can find your own little piece in it.
For sure.
Agreed.
So we would be mistaken if we did not touch on it. Corey mentioned up in his notes here. Why the choice to go with French here for the album?
Yeah. So my grandparents were native French speakers. My name Garrett is Acadian, or traces back to France and then French settlers in the Northeast.
Yep.
And I'm sorry, that's just not for the album here. That's the band as a whole.
Yeah, the project as a whole.
Yes.
On the first record, we do have a couple. The first record, we have a couple songs in English, because when I was writing that, I was not comfortable with the idea of writing lyrics in French yet, because it's not my native language, although I've studied it and I teach it professionally. That's like what I do for a job.
That's okay. Awesome.
Yeah. Thanks. I teach.
Yeah, because it really, the way you speak it, you could have easily thought, man, he was brought up French. Like, he brought up speaking French.
Thanks. That's very kind. I was exposed to it as a little kid around my grandmother a little bit, but mostly learned through study in high school and after, and just decided that I wanted to combine that with composing chamber music. And so, yeah, by the time we did an EP that was released last year, it was a split with Quercus Alba, and that is the first. So I should go back. The first record, there's two songs in French also, but those are poems by Paul Verlaine that I set to music and sang. And then on the EP that we did last year, all three of those tracks were all in French, lyrics by me. And I'm moving forward with that. So this whole new record is all my words as well.
Corey, do you have another question? Because I have something here. I don't want to feel like I'm hogging Jordan here, but my mind is... I just have so many things to ask. But okay, Jordan, if you've listened to any previous episodes or seen anything or my username, I'm an Opeth fan. Opeth to me is my favorite band.
You don't say. I would not have gotten that impression of you.
Exactly. But where I am going with this, on their most recent album, they recorded it in English and in Swedish.
Right.
And when I saw them most recently, they played the tracks off the new album. They played in Swedish. Now, where I am going with all this is, was it a conscious thought, though, that, you know, I don't want to say alienate, but there may be people who can't maybe attach on to the lyrics or the project as much, because, like me, admittedly, you know, people, I guess people would say, oh, you listen to metal, you can't hear what the bands are saying anyway.
Right. You know, people want, so that's going to be my first counterpoint.
Yeah. But if people want to read the lyrics, they say, man, what is Jordan even saying? It sounds beautiful, but I can't understand what he's saying.
Beautiful.
Yeah. Thanks for saying it's beautiful. I appreciate that.
Yeah, it is by no means like, oh God, Jordan, it sounds terrible. What a horrible language, you know?
Nice. Yeah, so I actually will start with that metal excuse because I, you know, the first records that I worked on that were put out into the world were with Falls of Araros, and like, you might be able to understand a couple words without following along, but you can't understand, like, they're just, especially on the early records, you cannot understand without lyrics.
Look at Corey's face as yeah. a black metal guy. Corey's like, yes, yeah. I love it. Yes.
I agree.
I tried my best. Yeah. And that doesn't mean that lyrics aren't important. I actually think that they are really important, but, yeah, I mean, I think that if people, this is kind of asking a lot of the listener, but if people want to, they can follow along with the lyrics. Falls of Araros publishes them, at least for the last several albums. And I, for this record, put English translations online, and they're in the liner notes. So if people really want to get in there, they can read them in English. It's not sort of the same visceral impact that you get understanding words. But also I think it was sort of knowing that at least for the time being, the majority of people who hear the album are not really going to understand is kind of comforting to me, to be honest. It's like, they can kind of get the musical vibe without getting caught up on my words. Maybe at least at first I'm getting more comfortable with people. I mean, we're still publishing the lyrics, so I'm obviously like not ashamed of them. Right. But
and plus, if you have any hidden lyrics in there, who cares? Nobody can understand what you're saying anyway. Right. So you could say whatever you want.
Not nobody. I've read some comments on the YouTube thing, and there's a couple French people who have some beef with some of the pronunciation. So you know,
ruins everything.
They do.
It's all right. It's all right. It's.
Yeah, okay. When you started writing these, or you know, you said you know you wanted it to have the same impact. If I said, Jordan, I want to hear the English translation of these songs or the English version of these songs, would it resonate the same? Do you think?
I think that I would feel more exposed singing those lyrics in English.
Really?
Yeah, because I. Yeah. And also I would have to do some fancy work to make the melodies make sense and not be stressing the wrong words and stuff like that. So it would take some work. It wouldn't just be, I don't think I'd be able to sit down and just play the song through in English. It would take some time. Yeah.
Find and replace sort of thing. Yeah.
Right. But yeah, that's an interesting question.
Corey, you have another one, bud?
So, I mean, I eventually will want to start talking about Last Summer because, you know, that was such an awesome experience. But I guess because that was my, you know, Fire in the Mountains of 2019 was my first, like, exposure to Foray Enemy, the project. As someone who has then kind of tried to work backwards from there, from his most recent stuff backwards, is there anything worth mentioning or noting about, like, either the creative process or the inspiration for this album that differs from anything beforehand?
Yeah. I think the biggest, well, I'll talk about me individually and then the group. So individually, I think I was a lot more confident and sort of knew what I wanted to do with this record. The first record I started writing before I knew I was even starting a group. So, some of those pieces were written, one of those pieces, the last piece on the first record was written before I had even, considered starting a group. And then, there's a three part suite, String and Hammer Quintet that I wrote for some musicians and then I asked them to sort of keep playing with me after that concert. So, and that became the first iteration of Forêt Endormie, and they, all of those people are on the first full length and the EP.
Okay.
And then there was some shifting around in the group. So the current lineup, came to be in like late 2018, early 2019. And that's the group that's on this album and the group that performed, at Fire in the Mountains last year.
Cool.
So yeah,
that's pretty fresh then. Cause that was,
it is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Actually, go ahead.
Sorry. Go, Jordan, go.
So, we had sort of a different lineup in Portland. We were playing live, and then Fire in the Mountains is actually the only live show that we've played with Lauren, who is the other singer and keyboard player. And then Maria joined us on the recording, and we played live with her in Portland. She plays clarinet. And so actually the sextet, that is the six-piece group that is our group, has actually never performed as a six-piece together before. Coming eventually, someday.
Yep. Coming eventually.
Yeah, someday. Yeah.
Coming eventually. You know, Corey has shared pictures with me. I've gone on live, and I've gone online, and I've seen pictures. How was the experience of coming on stage for that show? Because it freaking looks amazing. It looked priceless.
Words can't describe it. Yep, it was so fun. The whole weekend was amazing, just like in a lot of ways. So I had played that festival twice before with Falls of Roros, and so, and just like, it was kind of like a family reunion in a lot of ways.
Yeah,
like the Wayfarer and Dreadnought friends were there, and like Austin from Panopticon was there, and like his wife Becca, and just like all these friends. It was like coming, and it's in the middle of the most remote area in Wyoming, right? And so it was cool. It was like a family reunion, and then also bringing some of my friends from Portland who are not necessarily metal initiated to this. All of a sudden, it's like, so if you want to know about metal, like Ruins of Beveras is playing tonight, like Blood Incantation,
right?
Blood Incantation, yeah. like kind of like the best metal bands in the world are playing this weekend. So here you go. And then yeah, performing was really cool. We ended up opening the festival because some stuff was moved around.
I was gonna ask about that. Like you had some wrenches thrown in the game plan. That seemed to not, well, at least from an audience perspective, didn't really seem to matter too much, but
that's,
did it?
it didn't, no.
No, Jordan, okay. Be honest. At the time, you're like, oh, this sucks. What is happening?
No, actually, to be honest, I was actually glad we found out the night before. We were asked the night before. It had something to do with one of the people in Ozzy and the Jupiter. Like their flight got delayed or something. So I was actually happy to get our performance done. So I could just have a great weekend after that.
That makes sense.
But it was really fun. There was, I will say that being the one band, playing off of sheet music, I hadn't considered how
the wind.
So, we had to tape down our stands, like duct tape them to the ground and clip our parts to the stands. And I guess the violinist Sarah was saying that she had to press her bow, really like just force it down onto the strings. But apparently people couldn't tell. But yeah, we were all just, I was pretty stressed out the whole time, to be honest, because of the wind and things blowing around and yeah, people thinking their instruments were gonna blow off the stage and stuff. But it worked out.
Yeah, I do have some distinct memories of that Ruins of Beveras set when the rain started pouring down and they're like trying to tape up the laptops and everything. Like,
totally.
Yeah.
But that's like what it's worth it for.
Yeah.
To be there and do the thing there. Yeah.
Cool.
Ozzy overcame that problem from decades of drugs just by getting so big that he just uses a teleprompter. So maybe years down the line, you can get big enough so you guys can use teleprompters or iPads or something.
Yeah, the David, our bass player, said, like, if we do a show like that, we got to just memorize all the music. It's just gotta remove that variable.
Hey,
and I agree.
Jordan, you mentioned Austin, and you mentioned all these other bands. It's kind of cool. Like I did an interview with the guys in Creeping Death earlier this year, a Texas, death metal band that are, kind of in that old school American revival. Well, it's cool that you're like in this club of American atmospheric black metal bands. That is such a unique thing that I am not the biggest black metal fan like Corey is, but the black metal that I associate with is the atmospheric stuff, where it is that, sitting in the woods moment. So talk about that for a second, how it is to be part of this, atmospheric black metal club. Do you kind of recognize that you're part of that, or you share this kind of brotherhood with these other artists?
Yeah, for sure. I feel like feel like I'm part of this extended family of musicians. Some of the bands that I already listed that we've played with a lot, like Panopticon, and we played with Seder, Austin's other band, early on, and we've toured with Wayfarer a couple times and played with Dreadnought a bunch. And
I just heard the new Wayfarer single the other day. Oh, yeah, man, is that fantastic?
Yeah, it rules. Yeah, it's really cool. they're doing something.
They are doing things for sure.
Yeah, yeah, and Alda is another great U.S. band, and just like feeling like when there's these festivals, it's a chance to catch up with everybody, and really, it's always been really positive. I hear of like terrible things happening in the metal scene in general, which I know is true, but like my little corner of it has always been really supportive and positive and encouraging. It's like the friends that I've been able to make from playing music is kind of the best part of it.
Yeah.
Jordan, what was your introduction to music? What started you down this path?
Yeah, good question. I think it was just hearing pop radio in my parents' car when I was five. Yeah. And then really getting into it in middle school as like an emotional preteen, when the really big Korn albums were coming out. Like I was totally into nu metal, and that was my gateway.
Yeah. Okay, Jordan. Okay, I'm 37. Corey's, a couple of years younger than me. I don't know if you don't want to share your age, but what was your first? But let's be honest here. What was your first CD purchase or your first album? Mine was Green Day's Dookie album.
Yeah. Okay. I remember the first tape that I ever got. Okay. This is kind of a deep cut. It's my parents bought it for me. It's pre-nu metal. It's like, I think nu metal was happening, but it was pre me being interested in it. Yeah. Do you remember that single, like Jimmy Ray, Who Wants to Know? Do you remember that song? It's okay if you don't remember. Here.
I don't know if I do.
It doesn't really deserve to be remembered, but I got that up.
I remember Jimmy's Chicken Shack, but I don't remember Jimmy Ray. Okay.
Jimmy Ray, Google it. Like, it's not actually. Okay, yeah. It's not it really worth it.
Okay.
And then a litany of nu metal stuff.
Who was your okay? Give us your. Come on, throw yourself under the bus here.
Yeah, yeah.
Who was your nu metal band? Yeah, who were you defending up? Say no, they aren't trash. They're the band.
What new metal hill do you die on, basically?
Well, yes. New metal hill now or new metal hill like back in the day?
Then.
Oh, I mean, then I didn't need to defend it to anyone. Limp Bizkit.
Yep.
was awesome to me. And yeah, they still, for what they, I don't know. I'm not going to defend Limp Bizkit right now, but yeah, I was really into all that stuff. Like the dumber, the better.
Did you ever wear a backwards red hat?
I think that I probably wanted one, but never had one. It was like, yeah, like a little worse than actually wearing it. It's, I aspired to
be that red cap.
Right.
What about yours, Corey? Do you have a new metal band or?
It's the same. I mean, I went through a lot of like Linkin Park and all that stuff too, and Korn and all that, but I don't remember my first CD, but I definitely know that those Limp Bizkit albums were probably the most important for a couple years there, way back in the day. And I look back on them now, and I have to just kind of laugh at everything about them. But you know what? At the time, when you know things like lyrical relevance and all that stuff didn't really matter so much, it was just fun and it was stupid and whatever, man. It was a party. What can you say?
Right. I definitely connected pretty deeply with the. Well, I guess it's technically the second, but like that Stained album, where there was still screaming on it and stuff.
Yeah, dude, I love that album. Yes.
Yeah, the one before, the one with It's Been a While, like Dysfunction.
Dysfunction.
I was into that.
I was at the, and back in 1998, the first concert I went to was the MTV Return of the Rock Tour.
Okay,
with nice. Stained and POD, and I thought it was like the heaviest show I had ever been to.
Yeah.
I forgot about POD.
Yeah, and totally. Dope was on it, and Crazy Town.
Crazy Town.
Crazy Town.
That one song
is a
Butterfly, right?
Yes.
They are. They do not. What do I? I don't. I guess I don't want to take this time to really talk shit about Crazy Town, but. They're just not of the same caliber as the other bands that you mentioned.
No staying power.
No.
So, I have to ask you. We mentioned your first CD. I have to ask. I saw behind you a record player there. Are you a big record guy? Because I am huge.
Yeah. I do love collecting vinyl. I've slowed down a little bit recently just because I think I usually buy them at shows and there just isn't. There isn't that opportunity. I do have a little list that I'm working on for the next Bandcamp fee waiver day, which is I think
Friday.
So I'm probably gonna buy some stuff that day, but
Do you have a Holy Grail vinyl that you're trying to find?
Actually no. I think I used to sort of raid the used bins at various stores for stuff that wasn't pressed on CD. That was like a really cool thing. I'm still into that, but not going to record stores as much these days. And then I just buy new stuff, often from friends' bands or other bands that I've been into for a long time. But no, there's no coveted like first edition. Yeah, I don't invest in that, I guess.
And for those hearing this right now, your guys' album is available on vinyl. Gorgeous. Yeah, talk real quick. Who did the album art? That is fantastic.
Yeah, his name is also Jordan. Jordan Grimmer. He's an artist based in the UK, and we worked through email, and he would send me a draft, and I would give him feedback, and that's what we ended up with. I think it's awesome. I think you did a great job.
It is awesome. Yeah.
Gorgeous.
And this album's available on, like, I guess at the time this is going to post, all formats now, right? Like cassette, everything. Vinyl, digital. Yeah.
Yep. Cool. Yep. Cassette through Folkvanger Records and cassette CD and vinyl through Red Nebula. Yep.
Awesome.
Okay. Jordan, for you, you know, you say you want this to connect with people and it's like this journey to go on. Do you have a preferred format which you think you guys sound the best on?
So normally I sort of don't believe in the vinyl necessarily sounding better. However, listen to the test pressing the other day of the vinyl, and it was definitely the best I had heard the album. So
wow.
I don't know that it was because we turned it up loud or something, but It just sounded really good. It might have been because I had given myself a break from the album for a while too. That helps. But yeah, maybe vinyl. I don't know. It probably still sounds good turned up loud on a CD. CDs are good.
Isn't that like kind of the rule? Once you finish something, put it away for a couple of days or a week or two, and then go back to it and see how you react. Isn't that kind of one of those things that you advise? Yeah,
definitely good practice. Definitely good practice. I'm often, especially when I hear a song from like 5 years ago or something, I'm sometimes pleasantly surprised at what's there. So
yeah,
like, oh, we did that. Cool.
Awesome.
But yeah.
All right, so we've talked about, for some reason, nu metal, and then obviously black metal and stuff, and we covered obviously what Falls of Rose, you know, has meant to, you know, not just myself but the team. And I think back on, you know, last summer where, you know, I saw For Andor Me and Falls of Rose within basically a 2 week span. Where do you see like creative influence, either kind of, is it like a conscious effort to kind of keep the creative influence separated, or like where's the overlap, and do you embrace the overlap, I guess, because there's somewhat contrasting styles, obviously.
Yeah, there's definitely an overlap. For example, the sort of middle song on Patterns and Mythology is in some ways different instrumentation, but pretty sort of similar, fits in with For Andor Me's style a little bit, but like with lots of distortion and Ray playing percussion and stuff. But the compositional process, there's a motorcycle going by. the compositional process is pretty different. Falls usually, like one of us, usually Aaron or I, Aaron is the other guitar player, bring ideas to rehearsal and then we work them out together. And with For Andor Me, I write everything in Finale notation software and send parts to musicians, and then once we get together we sort of sculpt the dynamics and stuff, but it's less collaborative in the actual music writing. There's still collaboration on again, like dynamics and affect and all that stuff, but whereas with Falls it's like we're writing together. And generally also that, is this true? So for Foray Under Me, I write for all the instruments, right? And then with Falls, we're kind of mostly writing our own parts. Although there's a lot of times where, someone will give each other ideas. There's a lot of times where I'm playing parts that Aaron wrote and he's playing parts that I wrote, actually, which is kind of weird, but,
cool. So how about, just kind of piggybacking off of that, playing live? I mean, you obviously perform with Foray and then immediately Falls. Any kind of change in headspace you need to embrace to make that transition, or is it at this point pretty natural?
So we've only played one show. The first Foray Under Me show was opening for Falls in Portland. And that is, I think, not a great example because I was stressed out. It was like three years ago. But in general, when we have shows close together, it's mostly for me just making sure I have all the songs like under my fingers, that I can play them well, and that my voice, it's harder to do Falls of Braros right before For Andor Me because
yeah, it makes sense.
Screaming thrashes your throat and
right.
So it's mostly just about maintenance of the parts and my voice, but it doesn't really require like a huge transformation.
Right on.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, really, you mentioned real quick about playing instrument stuff, the harmonium.
Yeah.
How'd you learn to play that? How did that come in? Hey, I want to incorporate this on the album. Do you just have one laying around? Or you saw one in a thrift shop or something?
Good question. So I got inspiration to add it to the record when I was listening to Nico either Marble Index or Desert Shore, one of her albums, or The End, one of those three albums. She uses harmonium a lot, and I thought that it would sound cool on the record. And then we borrowed one from a friend in Portland and actually broke it a little bit while we were recording.
It's okay.
And
then, you just go to your local harmonium repair shop on the corner.
Yeah,
every block, it's like Starbucks.
Yeah, I went to a hardware store and got custom cut glass to replace it, and we actually, like, it was fine.
That's kind of awesome, actually.
Yeah. And
that
then,
is so metal. Yeah, we broke this record.
Yeah,
custom made glass. We're back in business.
And actually, that, if we're going to keep talking about the harmonium story, that harmonium actually isn't even on the record anymore. I borrowed a harmonium from my partner, and because I wanted to, we recorded the album in two parts, and so L'Encre Levé was recorded with the other harmonium, but then in the 4 months in between the sessions, I wrote the track before it, La Mer Nous Attend, and that is based around harmonium, and I wanted to have the same exact tone in both tracks because they lead into each other. So recorded, actually, though, both with that recorded with that harmonium, but I played harmonium on that first piece, that's harmonium and violin, and then Emmett, the piano player, played it on the other track.
Moving forward, it's going to kind of be interesting which harmonium you go back to. Do you use your partner's, or do you use the one you borrowed and broke?
It's a tough question to figure out. Yeah.
Are there any instruments that, you know, I know, you know, you just finished this one, and I'm sure your mind, who knows if your mind's already thinking about future material. Are there any instruments out there that you would possibly want to work with in the future?
Yeah. I've been thinking a lot about hammered dulcimer. It just sounds really cool. I don't have access to one right now, but I'm sure there's one that I could borrow and destroy.
You know, I don't hear it much in atmospheric black metal, but living in the whole Appalachian area, how about we incorporate some jaw harp?
Okay. maybe.
Yeah, that's like a puke. That was a stupid. Yeah, get out of here with that. Yeah, take that in your stupid little brown jug and hit the fucking bricks.
Gonna make some moonshine after.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, Corey, you got anything else, my friend? We've been chatting George Jarrett here. I'm having a blast.
Not really. I am. I'm curious what's, you know, I know a lot is still to develop in terms of the current world and what we're going for, but I guess I do have a question in the sense of, what do you see in the next like 12 months for AM Dorme? Do you see, you know, once they start concerts, do you want to like prioritize that once we're allowed to, or is it like jump back in the studio once, you know, you can move in that direction? Like, what would you prioritize, I guess, in terms of the next year or so?
Yeah. If we were sort of cleared, if shows were happening again, I think that I would try to do a string of at least Northeast shows to support the new record. But realistically, it doesn't look like that's going to be happening that soon. So instead, I'm planning on starting to write another record.
Cool.
Probably at the beginning of next year.
Nice.
Yeah.
Which is somehow only a few months away.
I know.
What? Jordan, was there any struggle you had even to say, hey, do we even release the album now?
Kind of. I think at first, because the album was ready in February, I think. Mm-hmm. And at first we were, you know, talking to labels and stuff. And there was a moment in March and April where I wondered if we should even, it just didn't seem important, you know? And then again, in May and June, with sort of just like how the national conversation has shifted to things that are much more sort of important than releasing records. But I think ultimately we decided that, you know, people are still listening to music. Sometimes, like, some people are listening to more music than they were before lockdown. So,
yeah, and I would agree with that. I would say I've definitely probably consumed more art over the course of the year than I have in years past, just because, you know, it's, you're avoiding public space to a, to a degree, or as much as you can. And, you know, it's just kind of an escape to put on some good stuff and have an escape that way. So yeah, I get it.
Totally.
Awesome.
Corey, you have any further questions for Jordan here before we let him go?
I mean, I can talk Portland breweries for like 4 hours. Please. But that's probably not the best use of time.
No. Go. Cause you mentioned in the pre-conversation, you mentioned, talk about that, please. You know, we do a podcast. We do a section on the website about brewing and beers and stuff. So please touch on that for a second.
We'll keep it simple. I don't know how often you frequent the scene out there, but it's obviously highly sought after. Do you have a favorite brewery in the greater Portland area?
My two favorites are Oxbow and Allagash.
Yep. Allagash makes some of the best beer in the world, and it's a little so under the radar. Yep.
I think so too, and they've just sort of been around for my whole, like, sort of before the craft beer boom, they were around, and I just think their beer is really good. And then Oxbow too. Yeah.
Not hazy New England IPAs for a change too, which is
Agreed. And there's a bunch of other great things here. I haven't been to one at all since the pandemic. Like, just doesn't seem like a priority in life right now, but certainly I'm going to drink an Allagash, whatever their stout is called, tonight while during the debate.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know, like, why am I putting myself through that? I don't know, but the Allagash will help.
I used to be a big drinker, and I used to love craft beers. I would frequent the DC craft beer scene all the time, and I would travel everywhere. But then my heart stuff happened, and I've had to give up drinking totally. But my girlfriend drinks, and I have seen, you know, from the outside looking in, how these hard seltzers are
seem
to be everywhere. Mm-hmm. It's something when, you know, the Anheuser-Busch and, you know, starts making one.
Corona makes one.
Yeah. Are the craft breweries, have they shifted to kind of a more of a healthier platform? Are they doing anything? Are they doing anything different? Are there craft seltzers?
Craft seltzers. I have not seen that yet.
Mm-hmm. I do know. Jordan, being New England, are you familiar with Night Shift Brewery?
I'm not.
Yeah, they're in Boston. They actually do make a seltzer.
Wow.
And they're like a very sort of small microbrewery, and like, oh, we're gonna do a seltzer because trendy, I guess. I don't know. I don't have any other reason for it, but I do think the market's probably a little saturated at this point. But
yeah,
that's about all I'd say.
Right.
Yeah, because it just seems like it's a big shift. That people are, you know, just trying to be healthy. Like, you know, I've recently got into riding. I have a bike that I've tried to make it as close to a Peloton bike as I can. So people are, you know, trying to be healthy, like weights right now. You can't even find free weights right now with gyms being closed. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, you know, seltzers have taken off because people are trying to be healthy.
Right.
Not, you know, drink. Because obviously you guys look slim and trim. Me, I'm as my grandmother would say, I'm a healthy boy.
Amazing.
So, like, see Corey with his battle vest there. I'm always envious. I'm always envious because I don't know if you have a vest, Jordan, but me, when I try and wear a vest, it turns into a battle sports bra. So.
And that goes back to the MDF days, Buke. That's probably why it sits on my door now. It doesn't come out too often.
Yeah. So, totally. But you know, last question, I'll let you go because I find it interesting. I like bringing in the personal side. I love video games. That's what I love to do when I'm not hunting. Video games is my life. What are you doing when you're not being Jordan, the French teacher, the artist? What do you do? Are you into video games? Do you like movies? Do you like to read? I'm just curious.
Yeah.
Are you like a board game guy?
I actually love all the things that you just listed. Yeah.
Okay. Oh, do you want to be my new best friend, Corey? We'll see you later. No, go ahead, bud.
Yeah, totally love video games. Currently working on music for an indie video game that I. That's all I'm allowed to say.
Yeah.
Contractually. Yeah. which I'm really excited about.
I love indie games. Oh my god.
Yeah. What is your favorite that you've played recently?
My favorite indie game that I played recently is The Messenger.
Okay.
Katana Zero.
Mm-hmm.
Crypt of the Necro Dancer, of course, is always one of my hidden gems. I just got Spelunky 2 before we came online here. Hades and Dead Cells are my big indie games right now.
Cool. That's awesome.
Any of those in your wheelhouse?
I don't know. I've heard of Dead Cells, but yeah, that's a different edge of the landscape for me. I really love Banner Saga. Like all
I
three
love
of
Banner Saga too. Yes.
Yep. And what else? I've been playing this game called Superliminal. Have you heard of that? It's a really bizarre. It's kind of like Portal 2, or Portal. But the sort of the rules of how physics work sort of keep changing as the game progresses. So like. The world doesn't behave as you expect.
Is that the game when you walk into a room, like, you know, like a box may appear small, but if you kind of step and turn a certain way, the box will get huge and stuff? Yeah, I saw the Giant Bomb guys do like an early look at it.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
Okay. You see, we could have talked about. Okay, I have a video game content I do for this site. I may have to have you back on and you and I can just talk video games for hours.
That sounds great. I'd love to.
Great. Well,
awesome.
I will give you the last word here, my friend. Where can people check you out, all your projects, all your music and stuff?
Sure. The best place is Bandcamp, because all our stuff is available physically on physical media and also for download. But it's on Spotify, YouTube, all the places. And yeah, thank you, Buke. Thank you, Corey, for having me on. I appreciate it.
This is awesome. I had a blast. I'm glad this worked out.
Yeah, me too.
Buke, I think you're muted.
Thank you for being flexible with the scheduling with us and everything. Corey, yes. Thank you for joining me here. Jordan, thank you for putting up with my mush mouth. And again, I apologize. Apologize for butchering any album title or prod band name. I mean no harm in that. I'm just an idiot.
You're just gonna stand in the mirror tonight for like 10 hours and just recite these names over and over again.
Sounds fun.
And maybe I can get you added on Steam and we can play some games here if you're on Discord.
Okay.
Okay, my friend. Well, Jordan, it was a pleasure to talk to you. Corey, I love having you join me here.
And
until next time, ninecircles.co for blogs, interviews, our audio thing. Please buy Jordan's stuff here, support him, and we'll talk to you next time.
Thanks, guys.